You're listening to Longwoods Radio, your healthcare source for ideas, new policies, and best practices. Listen in now to Longwood's own Breakfast with the Chiefs as Dr. Mary Ferguson Paré speaks about the global nursing shortage and her involvement in creating a high retention environment at the University Health Network.
I'm here to share three case studies with you about building a high retention environment at University Health Network. And I do want to say, with all respect for University Health Network, in the past it has not been regarded as a great place to work for nurses. So I could tell you that by the end of the 90s, I met a board member who was a board member with me on another national board over coffee in Ottawa one day. And he was saying to me, and this is in the 90s, you know, I think we're doing great work at UHN, but our staff hate us and our patients hate us, and I just don't, you know, that really concerns me. Of course, in 01, I came to UHN at Tom Clausen's request to begin to work on those two very important issues for UHN. And immediately we began to work at building a high retention environment. And there's some key players right in this room today with me today that I will speak about and thank them for their leadership in this. But we started out by, first of all, putting forward a strategy around a return on investment strategy, really, around moving to massive full-time increase in full-time. We now deliver 86.6% of our care with full-time staff. That has improved quality, it has improved our mortality rate, it has improved retention, it has improved quality overall, patient safety. And this has been a very, very good decision. And we also spent a great deal of time focusing on other ways that we could invest in the workforce and draw in innovation grants and other ways in which investment in nursing could pay off. And when I was speaking to Anton about this presentation, he asked that I share three case studies with you of examples, living examples, of the sorts of things we're doing at UHN that we think draw people to us and help us to retain them. And all of these are built on a foundation of a respectful and high-quality working environment. And I would have to say, and I do want to acknowledge, our work environment is not perfect. And every day we make mistakes. Every day we do something that probably wouldn't be what we'd say would be the best example of a healthy work environment. But we are trying to keep our eye on that ball and to lead in a way that helps us to do better every day. And we just reviewed our employee satisfaction results, and they've gone over the top. And that is a very, very welcome result, because as I mentioned to you, when I began in 01, our satisfaction results were terrible, and especially for nursing, they were not good. So we have achieved a great triumph, I think, in that improvement, and we have also simultaneously improved our staff satisfaction. So I'm going to talk to you about how we put a focus on building a research culture. As a result of that research culture, we've created a number of products that have helped us, and we have put a focus on building a learning environment for nurses, all in support of a healthy work environment. We've worked with our leaders in learning a new word, and I mentioned this in my last presentation. I mentioned that we had problems originally with our leaders saying no a lot to staff. No, no, you can't have a leave. No, you can't get off to get married. No, you can't have a honeymoon. No, you can't have a leave of absence to take a trip. And I, over time, have encouraged them to remember there's only needs to be one word in their vocabulary, and that is yes. Yes, you can have a honeymoon. And yes, you can have a leave of absence and come back when you feel like it. Because we have a new breed of cat in nursing. We have professionally educated nurses who want a professional work, and they want to be treated like professionals. And they want to be part of the decision-making game. And so a research culture and a learning environment is critical to that approach, and a very proactive way to hire and recruit staff. So the first thing I'm going to talk about with you is the compelling case. Why would we bother doing this? And secondly, the three case studies, and the first about our proactive planning and strategy. and second, about collaborative staffing models that we're working with, which the sort of subtitle of that would be give everything away and it will come back to you and pay off. And the third is innovation and service delivery, utilizing nurses in the way that they know how to be and can contribute to the compelling issues of the system. So the first piece would be the compelling case, and I won't spend a long time on this with you, but I do want to say that we know, of course, that we have a situation in which we do not have nurses employed in full-time positions to an adequate level, and so still you'll see that in the Canadian context only about 55.8% of nurses are in full-time jobs, and that is needs to be changed immediately, and it is the result of mythology, long-held mythology, that is more expensive to have full-time staff. And I can just tell you, it is not. It is actually less expensive. We get five times the return on investment for every full-time staff we hire than we do for each part-time and casual staff we hire, and that's based on hours returned of service compared to hours invested in orientation. And so there are many, many other ways that you can analyze that, but this context needs to change. Secondly, of course, we have a massive predicted shortfall. Nursing's not unique in this. I think this is a human resource issue for all working groups. This is particularly concerning for the healthcare system because nursing typically represents less than 25% of the cost of a healthcare organization, but delivers 75% of the service and is critical to medicine being able to practice. The reason I can say that is that we went through SARS, and when we had SARS at our Toronto sites, we had to go down to 50% occupancy. And the reason for that was that we couldn't move nurses, and nurses could not choose to move among different units and work in different units. And as soon as they could not do that, the shortage showed itself in the system. And that revelation also showed us that our physician colleagues could not practice. And many of our colleagues at UHN opened clinics at the Delta Chelsea in desperation, trying to see their patients, but they couldn't operate, they couldn't admit to the same level, and it was a real tragedy for patients. So the critical importance of us bolstering, retaining, and growing our human resource capacity in nursing is important for all aspects of healthcare delivery and medical practice. And, of course, I'm going to talk lots about retention, but just to give you the UHN context, we have about 3,000 nurses and about 83 practical nurses. And we also utilize a few other caregivers. We utilize students as constant observers. But predominantly, we're staffed with registered nurses. We use an evidence-based tool that we have developed and worked through and validated with other organizations to tell us when we need registered nurses or when we can utilize registered practical nurses or other caregivers. And that's been a very valuable resource to us, and we review our units and are reviewing all of our units just right now on that issue. So this just gives you a sense, and I'm going to rattle through really quickly our context here, but gives you a sense of our full-time and our percentage of full-time that that we deliver care, and that the 86% is there. So why did we develop a proactive strategy for our analysis? What happened was that we built the 80-20 research, and Deborah Bournes is here, my co-principal investigator. Maybe you should wave your hand there, Deb. There she is. And Deb and I conceived the 80-20 research, which suggested that nurses could be released 20% of their time to learn, grow, develop, conduct research, do quality projects. Of course, what did we find? We found that we had lineups of people waiting to be hired to the demonstration unit, to the research unit. Our retention was 100% at year two. We found that the staff satisfaction, the patient satisfaction rose really high in comparison to comparator units in other hospitals. And we found that our costs were basically neutral at the end of year two, although we can't really say that that was all entirely due to the study. We found that our lost time incidents were and incidents to patients were reduced. We found that nurses redesigned how care was delivered and developed and grew through the entire process. And so it was an obvious sort of connection to the knowledge work of nurses, to viewing nurses as professionals, and to giving them a work employment model that helped them to live as professionals. If we looked at any other knowledge industry, let's say the computer industry, let's pick Hewlett-Packard. We know that knowledge industries give a large, and you are from Hewlett-Packard, we know that knowledge industries give a good percentage of time for research and development. And what would that percentage be, about 20%?
At least
10%. And I remember at one time learning from the organization behavior literature that other organizations give as much as 20% time for that purpose. And we in healthcare give our nursing staff probably less than 1%. That's ridiculous. And so our research showed that this is a very workable strategy for nursing, and it would be also for any of the health professions. And as a result, we needed to be able to staff the unit, and we found we couldn't staff it because we didn't have the necessary information, and we developed now Nurses for Tomorrow, and with Deborah's leadership, Nurses for Tomorrow is going to go up for Saskatchewan, maybe soon for Ontario, and we'll have a predictive model, and I'll show you how that looks. So we found that existing HR and finance data wasn't what we needed. It was retrospective. We needed to be able to look forward, and we were not able to predict what we needed, and we were always behind the eight ball with vacancies. The research here at U of T shows that for every time that you have a vacancy, the turnover study nationally, and Andrea Bowman's here and others who've been involved in that, the turnover study nationally shows roughly that the cost of turnover in nursing is the annual salary of the nurse. And so it is a ridiculous waste of money, first of all, to have turnover, but secondly, to leave those vacancies open and not have a proactive way of replacing. So we used a tool which managers completed. Originally, it was a spreadsheet. Now it's a web-based tool, and the managers answer a number of questions that talk about the reality today and what they know is coming. Of course, they know that people will be talking about taking maternity leave. Sometimes it becomes visibly evident. And they know that people are talking about retirement and when that may be, and they often have advance notice of that. And so they predict those things, and we are building this tool to be more than nursing. And so all of these different customized options are coming. And we produce reports that look like this, which you can't read, but really tell the managers all about the circumstances in their unit and relate that also to the general ledger information, which is extremely important in terms of linking their budgeted staffing and their occupancy rates and their sick time, overtime, and this one shows the linkage to sick rate, overtime rate, and agency rate. So that they can see a complete picture of their unit and of their human resources for that unit, and can know in advance what it is that they need to be doing and to begin to recruit before they have the vacancy and trigger a posting for that position. This is quite a, in healthcare, a new way of doing. It has always been that someone would leave, And then a posting could be made, and we would begin to recruit. This is turning that on its ear and taking the exact opposite approach. And, of course, we have a very enabling factor in that we created a nursing resource team at University Health Network, which is a virtual unit to which we can hire nurses. And they are there prepared to work in particular areas of the organization, like medicine, surgery, neuro, critical care, eMERGE. And they have full orientation, the full-time manager, full-time educator, and they are working there by choice, and they have the opportunity at a later time to apply for vacancies that occur on the patient care units. And we find that about 10% a month move to those vacancies as they occur. So we have a ready-made workforce in the nursing resource team to fill those vacancies immediately in seamless way. And, of course, the unit incurs no orientation cost because these people are already working in those units. So this information has been critical to us in being able to project and to plan in a proactive way. And just to give you some outcomes, this just shows you our net predicted shortfall. And we were always behind, kind of behind the eight ball in a sense. When I began, we always had this mass of vacancies we could never get on top of. We were hiring. We would hire. We would always still end up with this background of vacancies. And so you can see that we'd have about 125 sort of irresolvable vacancies. And, of course, you know that that's costing money all the time. Those vacancies not only cost money in terms of costly fill using overtime and agency, but for every time that you use overtime, you're going to get subsequent sick time, which will cause more relief time to be required. And so having that backdrop of this continuous vacancy was not a good thing. And we began to work with this new model of predicting and to provide the necessary data and information for our managers, and as a result, proactively recruited using the new graduate strategy, which, of course, is a no-brainer, a wonderful thing. It gives you 6 months of salary for each new grad that you hire, and you have that 6 months of salary to help them with a full orientation and move things forward, utilizing that funding, which is a gift, to help them to get established. And then by the time that they're established and ready to work, more vacancies have occurred, and they're ready to stream into those vacancies. And so this has enabled us, through the new grad strategy, to hire as many as 220 new grads in a year. And Claire Millett is here. You better wave your hand, Claire. And Claire leads that initiative, and Claire leads the Learning Organization Initiative for us, which has been critical to the success of this strategy. And so you can see now that as of Q4, we were down to a net vacancy of 6. And that is a little misleading because you would actually say we have no vacancies because we have a large number of nurses, about 62, I think, as of today, in the nursing resource team who are there to provide relief and are available. And, of course, our managers are very successfully hiring as well as we go along. So we're although we would say that we have a net of 6 at that quarter, if you factor those ready and available nurses, it really is 0. So we looked at and just to show you our net predicted shortfall, this just gives you a sense of how we look by site, our Princess Margaret, Toronto Western, and Toronto General sites, and so there is some variability among them. And just gives you a sense of, and you can see the trajectory around how we've been able to bring that backdrop of vacancies down to virtually nothing. This is my favorite graph, that ball in the background, which my colleague Rob Miller refers to as the hole, is the backdrop of the number of vacancies that we have in place, and then the projected. The bars in the front are really what we know and can predict will be the turnover by year. And those predictions come by looking back and looking forward, using our predictive modeling, but looking back for historical trends. And you'll see that our retirement numbers are coming down. And we've seen about a year added to the retirement age over about the last past 5 years. So we're up around 61 point something years of age now. But since the market turn, I think we'll see the retirement picture look different. And our sick time's looking pretty great compared to industry and is trending slightly down. Our overtime, similarly, a bit of up and down in overtime, and that relates to the influx of new grads and then soaking them all up again and then influx again in the following spring, and you'll see that picture in all of these graphs. And our agency usage is a huge triumph. As you know, we can pay double or triple time for agency, and we are very, very low in agency use now. We're extremely pleased about that. Our costs have come way down because we have invested in bringing nurses in proactively and preparing them proactively. And so that's a very good news story for us. And so using this tool, which now is being sourced by the province of Saskatchewan, and Deb and her team are putting it up for Saskatchewan, Saskatoon region as their first start. We were just up in Huron-Perth yesterday, and Huron-Perth Healthcare Alliance are going to come up on the tool, and we have James Bay there as well. And so speaking to our chief nursing officer for Ontario, there's quite a bit of interest in possibly creating this capacity for Ontario, and the web-based tool will be ready to accommodate that probably within 6 months. So nurse managers use the tool, and we use it by really at every level of the organization. We report to the board, we report to senior management, we share the tool with all the vice presidents for the clinical areas, the directors, clinical managers, all of them are using it and they receive the reports. And we are building other partnerships to spread its uptake, as I've mentioned. And so we really are seeking through this to be an industry leader, but to share this effectively with the industry so that that kind of modeling can be available and that managers really can come out of the information-free zone that they presently manage from in healthcare. Most managers, our managers especially, are very keen to have information at their fingertips that helps them to make great decisions about staffing and about recruitment. And so we think as well that this has maintained a lot of stability in our environment, has helped us to achieve those improvements in employee satisfaction, and has certainly saved us money on the overtime agency sick time rates, and also on our turnover costs. So that's been, and being able to use the new grad initiative as well has really helped. A second case study that I want to talk to you about is global practice. And this is about giving away your resources in order to retain them. And so the global practice initiative was given birth by the fact that I went up to James Bay, Hudson's Bay, to visit the nurses up there all around the nursing stations and to see how they were doing in practice. And when I was president of the Registered Nurses Association, I had the wonderful opportunity to visit nurses in practice in a variety of different settings. When I went to James Bay and Hudson Bay, I was really struck by how similar we were. How similar UHN was to Winnebago General Hospital or Moosonee Hospital or Attawapiskat or Pewanik Health Center. How similar we are. And you may think that's weird. But the fact of the matter is that they're dealing with exactly the same challenges as we are. They are dealing with a shortage writ large, about 35% vacancy rate, and they are dealing with recruitment and retention is probably their number one issue in being able to deliver care and trying to create a quality work environment. And they're dealing with the same things that we are. And when I was there, I talked with their president and CEO, Pat Chilton, who's the most one of the most creative and brilliant CEOs that I have ever met, of course, aside from Bob Bell, who I work for. And Pat Chilton was amazing to speak with, and I said, Pat, why don't we build a collaboration? And we could send you nurses on a rotating basis, because they were trying to bring agency nurses up from Toronto at huge expense and really not good outcomes. And so I said, we could create a workforce for you from among our staff on a rotating basis to help you with your staffing needs. Of course, my ideal thing would be that we'd actually lose staff to them. And I think we are going to this year. I think it's one nurse who's going to go up there full time. But we have had 30 nurses come forward on a voluntary basis and go up in through their facilities on rotation. And the nurses come back, and they're thrilled, absolutely thrilled. And I just want to acknowledge Claire and her team who lead this global practice initiative. And the fundamental underpinning of the initiative is that we would share staff because, why? Because this is a retention strategy for us. It will only benefit us because our staff love to do these things. And people will come and work for us because they'll know that, you know what, I could go and work at UHN, but gee, I could have an adventure and I could go to James Bay, or I just came back now from Ethiopia. Well, soon they'll be able to go to Ethiopia. And I just also was recently in Bahrain exploring a collaboration there, and some of our nurses will be able to go to Bahrain. And these things are really valued by nurses. They like to be able to do these things. And so the James Bay is a perfect example of that. And this just shows you the difference between our facilities and the difference in our location. But I do want to underscore that there is really little difference other than context. And the wonderful leadership that's going on there and the work of the nurses is inspiring. And our nurses come back so pumped and inspired by having the opportunity to work there for 1 month. And the first question they always ask is, why can't I practice at UHN? Because they feel so constrained by the layers of other players who all take a part of the team, interprofessional team enterprise. When they're there, they are the team. And they do everything. And they love it. And they do it well. And they come back feeling like, yes, this is it. And some of them say, I want to go back right away. In fact, all of them have said they want to go back. All of them said they want to stay longer. And I think one is actually going to leave us, I hope, and go there. Because that's really, I'm serious, my test of success with this is that we would share with them at least one full-time staff. We have had ministry funding to get this started as an innovation project, and we have funding to continue into next year, and we are very, very pleased. There's been lots of coverage about it, and we've used our MFPTV and our nursing channel, www.nursingchannel.ca, to put the word out about it, and we have been asked to speak at every one of Health Canada's and First Nations Inuit branch conferences virtually about it, and we're working with Trent University, thanks to Jillian Howard, who's here. You better wave, Jill. Jillian Howard's put us in touch with Trent, and we think that we'll be able to have some educational linkage with the Trent Faculty of Nursing, where they have an Aboriginal health thread through their program. So they're going to be connecting some students in with us who would buddy and go up with our nurses into James Bay. So lots of interest in this, and another strategy, using external funding, using innovation grant money that we developed a proposal for and obtained to get this happening. And now that it's underway, we're hoping that we'll be able to have a sustainability strategy. We know we will have a sustainability strategy to keep it going. So I just wanted to end here. Where am I? I'll get down to evaluation, but there's a wonderful note here around the cost saving to Winnebago Health Atascawin as a result of this. And they have about 79, I think, is that right, Claire, 79 FTEs?
Yeah, a little less.
Possibly less in their entire health system. Very small health system. We, on the other hand, are somewhere in the 3,000 mark. And they've been able to save almost three FTEs of salary as a result of our collaboration. And they are over the moon about that. That's a huge saving to them. And they are investing that in high retention. And so this is a win-win-win all around. And so their capacity has been significantly increased by this. And our capacity, we can only win by participating in this. So just some of the coverage that's occurred. And then the last thing I want to talk about is creating opportunities for nurses to be everything they can be and to deliver to the key issues of our healthcare system. And so I'm just thinking access, wait times, time to admission from emergency to an inpatient bed for us, and for long-term care, access to emergency care. And so, you know, this just gives you a sense of the current system that you will know and know well, characterized in this way. And we know that it is bad for elderly people to come to hospital and be admitted, and it is bad for them to come to an emergency department because it's dangerous for them. It's dangerous. And the best place for them to be, unless they really need emergency care, is to be in their home, in their residence, where they live in their long-term care home. And so based on that and based on some learnings that came from my sabbatical, which I know is on your reference list, when I was on my sabbatical looking at basically Northern European countries and their healthcare systems, I learned that outreach programs from acute care had really good results. And so I've been working on Josh Tepper about giving us a shot at having, at trying this, and we put in a long-term care mobile emergency program at our Toronto Western Hospital site. And we, of course, I thought that this could help us to address a lot of the issues around the pressure in the emergency department that we all feel. It is everywhere. It isn't just at UHN. It is certainly a system-wide issue. And certainly the LHINs have been considering strategies to fund programs such as this in recognition of these issues and ALC issues. So we created a partnership. We employed three geriatric nurses in our emergency department at the Toronto Western, and we created a partnership initially with these homes. And this partnership is expanding all the time. We have homes coming forward who refer into the Toronto Western site who want to be part of this partnership, and they want to have access to these nurses being able to be called. And so these are the partners, and you can see that the potential number of beds is very large among even those first two phases of partners. And we receive requests for consultation for these are the major reasons, 70% of the reasons why those requests come. And in the past, before the long-term care mobile emergency program, these were the sorts of things that people were transferred to emergency for. And of course, unnecessarily. Really doesn't need to happen. Because now we know that we can send our nurses, and with agreements that we've made between our emergency physicians and the home physicians, they are empowered to work in a really an advanced practice role, in a sense where they are empowered to address these issues and go ahead and to proceed to address and deal with these issues. We're also working on suturing, for example, and other things that can keep us from having to transfer them. And so this has been an absolute triumph in terms of savings. And my colleague Marnie Weber's there in back toward the back row, and you better wave, Marnie. And these are all my treasured colleagues who helped make all of this possible. And Marnie's been working with us, and Mary Jane McNally, our director at the Toronto Western site. And we did the evaluation just in the window between October and February, and this just gives you a sense of the number of calls and the number of consultations, and 134 averted emergency department transfers. That was what we would call a 77% success rate. And we were very, very pleased that 77% of these we were able to deal with without the transfer. And this just gives you a sense of another triumph, whereby we looked at the overall ambulance transfers from all of these homes, and we learned quite surprised to learn that we had averted 10% of all ambulance transfers to all emergencies in the area. So any emergency, this is not just the Toronto Western, so we're helping all emergencies through this process. And so we think this is a huge, huge triumph. And then the last and most wonderful thing is that we are actually saving money. And so each of the visits, the difference really, the savings is 21%. It costs 21% less to do things in this way rather than using an emergency visit. And we used our absolutely rock-bottom, lowest-cost emergency visit. And I know when I showed Bob Bell these figures, he said, "You are crazy saying that that's how inexpensive an emergency visit can be. It's a lot more than that, Mary." And I said, "Yes, Bob, but we wanted to take the most conservative estimate." So we think our savings are even greater. And this has been a huge success, mostly because We got an innovation grant to do this. We empowered nurses to do something they could do. We worked with partners and collaborated. We, just as we collaborated with James Bay, and we will collaborate with Ethiopia and others, that collaboration has paid off for us in terms of building a retention strategy, a recruitment strategy, and a positive way in which nurses can practice a place that they'd want to come and be to practice. And so it has cost us nothing, and we are only going to gain by using these innovation funds to get these things rolling. I can tell you, a little bird told me that it looks like we're going to get sustainability funding from some unknown source. And so we're proceeding after our innovation grant has finished now, because our outcomes are so darn good that it really causes one to think that it should become an initiative for our Toronto Central area. So these really sustaining these projects is the key, and we begin working on sustainability as soon as we start. And each of them has a sustainability plan. So return on investment here. As you can see, of course, retention and reducing the cost of turnover to UHN. Recruitment. We have no problem recruiting staff. We have lots of new grads and some experienced staff, not a lot of experienced staff, coming and applying, even waiting for a vacancy and an opportunity. So word is out, good place to work, not perfect, but we're working on it, and word is out. So that in itself has been a tremendous return on investment. We are replacing mostly at straight time now, which is a tremendous cost saving. And you saw that we've reduced and we've got our sick time fairly consistently low, which, of course, keeps our overtime low. And I showed you our agency costs way, way down. Our reduced ED visit cost is a tremendous contribution to the system. We won't realize that, but the system will. And the reduction in emergency transfers, that will be a huge credit to the system. The ambulances will be available to someone who needs an emergency transfer. And I mentioned, of course, recruitment and retention and reduced turnover costs. And in the end, we're at the enviable place of having no vacancies in a global shortage. And we are now into a situation where we're seeing the system contract somewhat. And I know 70% of Ontario hospitals are reducing activity this year for the past year, and we may see some further contraction, which is going to soak up some of that shortage initially. But we must not get complacent with that, because unfortunately, very shortly thereafter, we're going to realize that the shortage is still there, and it will come back to bite us. So we can't allow this period of contraction to help us to be complacent. We have to get the healthy work environment right. We have to have a positive retention strategy universally. We've got to get full-time up, and we have to retain every nurse who's educated in Ontario to capitalize on the investment for those nurses in Ontario. They do want to stay with us, and they can only add value in the long run. So I'll stop here, and I think I see Anton is looking to start question period.
Thank you, Mary. Anytime you can get Trent into the conversation, I'm happy. I got two 18-year-olds writing their last exam of the year, so
okay.
It's a great school. So, Jillian, where are you? Are you a graduate, too? Not a graduate. But the Zowski name is all over, I got to tell you, that school. So it's a great, great school. So the other thing I wanted to note is the best read stuff we have is when we help people solve problems.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask you, well, one is, can we get some of this stuff in between covers of some of our journals, I guess?
Absolutely.
And we'll certainly get this one up on our site. Mm-hmm. But what's your own process in getting the rest of the workforce at UHN to adopt some of this?
Well, are you thinking outside of nursing?
Or? Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
You are the leaders of healthcare, aren't you?
Well, you know, Claire and I were talking about this earlier about that's probably one of the things that has caused UHN to be hated over time, is the perception that it regards itself as the best, which is a dangerous place to be.
I'm talking about nursing.
Well, I don't think I think there's great nursing going on everywhere, but we've done a lot of good work in these areas, and we've been trying very actively to give that away and to share that. I think a great gift is the Nurses for Tomorrow, helping just to get more proactive in the system at large. So I think there's lots more we can do, though, and certainly publishing in the journal would be one, and publishing the case studies, we're really cooking for a publication in Nurses for Tomorrow shortly, and we're busy doing and trying to create. So it's been a wonderful several years. We've built a trajectory. We can show the evidence. And one of the greatest triumphs, I think, is that the Nova Scotia Nurses Union, I'm looking at my own colleague back there, but the Nova Scotia Nurses Union has negotiated 80-20 into their collective agreement, which I think is fabulous. So I'm really hoping that that will be a harbinger of great things to come, because that would mean that we could have a model of employment for nurses that is geared to a knowledge worker. And of course, there would be the knee-jerk reaction in the industry that that's going to be expensive, but I can tell you it won't be expensive in the long run, because once the investment is made, it will pay off in spades. It will pay off in patient safety and quality. It will pay off in retention. It will pay off in drawing the nurses to our facilities. So I just think kudos to the Canadian Federation of Nurses Unions as well. We've been working with them around implementing 80-20 in Newfoundland, Nova Scotia, BC, and then taking the spin-off from the 80-20, the Nurses for Tomorrow, and bringing that alive, Saskatchewan, Ontario. So we have been sharing these strategies liberally. We've just, here in Perth, are our newest partner. You may have heard that a while back that Seaforth Hospital had to close their emergency half-time because of staffing issues. And so we've been working with them on a variety of strategies and building on collaborative staffing model and building on Nurses for Tomorrow and these strategies around helping them to kind of get their arms around where they're at and then create some positive strategies to go forward. And to me, the more we share, the better we will be collectively. And among us who work in the public system, I think it is incumbent upon us to share with each other and to build these collaborative strategies, certainly within the LIN structures. And there's such opportunity to work together and there are many, many places that are doing excellent creative things that we could all learn about and leverage from. So
we're going to cut it short a little bit in order to keep peace with the school here, because we have a large class on the outside and we do like these facilities. So Mary, I'd like to thank you very much.
My pleasure.
I think they enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Thanks for inviting me.